Thank you everyone for your attention. Welcome everyone. Just want to make sure everyone is in the right room. The topic for this presentation is a modern approach to group risk pricing and credibility. My name is Edward Tam from KPMG Actuaries, and it's my pleasure to introduce our presenter, Hector Pershayan. After completing his HSC in 1999, Hector Pershayan studied actuarial studies at Macquarie University. He completed his degree in 2003. Hector is an associate of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia. In 2004, Hector begins his actuarial career working for Tower Australia Limited and has remained with them since this time. Hector has 4 years combined experience in group risk and retail pricing. It was this role that Hector was first exposed to the subject of credibility, in which he remains keenly interested. Hector is currently working with Tower's retail risk valuation team, where he contributes to the determination and reporting of Tower's profit, policy liabilities, solvency, and capital adequacy. Now, I just want to give you the format of the presentation, because there's a lot of material to go through. The presentation will be around 45 minutes, followed by questions and afternoon tea. We will remain in this room during afternoon tea if anyone wants to ask more questions. Please welcome Hector Pershayan.
Hi, everyone. I understand we probably won't have too much time for questions because we're running a little bit late, but I'll just get started. I decided to kind of do some work on credibility because my experience in group risk pricing, I thought that was kind of we're quite advanced in a lot of the techniques we use in pricing, and I thought it was one of the areas where there was some room for improvement in modelling. So I just want to get started. There's a lot to go through. I'm going to talk about 5 things today. I want to talk a little bit about pricing accuracy. This is basically the driver for improved credibility modelling, and I want to talk about the benefits of pricing accuracy. I also want to talk about a framework for credibility. Essentially here I want to kind of establish a logical way of thinking about credibility and what credibility models should do in group risk pricing. Then I want to talk a little bit about existing credibility models. And here I want to talk about kind of the theoretical basis of these models and how they address the accuracy issue. I'm going to touch on very quickly on the proposed credibility model. I can't go into any kind of detail, but it's a model I propose that we should be using, which kind of has this property of greater accuracy. I also want to talk finally about a method that I used at the end of the paper in order to compare the proposed models to the existing model. Starting with pricing accuracy, essentially, I guess it would be common to think for the non-actuary that pricing accuracy at the portfolio level is sufficient. In other words, if you underprice some group risk plans and you overprice others, and this cross-subsidisation in aggregate nets off across your entire portfolio, and you end up with a situation where your risk premiums match your overall claims, then what's the problem? Why do we need a greater level of accuracy? We've got a match between our risk premiums and claims at the portfolio level, and everything's okay. That's kind of a common view. And essentially what I argue is that it's not really the case. Cross-subsidisation between plans comes at a cost to the insurer, and this cost comes through anti-selection effect, which occurs, which kind of causes insurers to build an implicit margin within their rates. It's kind of a lot more to this in the argument in the paper, but I'm kind of going to rush through this. But essentially, greater cross-subsidisation causes a greater implicit margin to be built into insurers' rates and group risk pricing, and group risk market traits are a driver for this. And there's a lot of rewards for being able to reduce this cross-subsidization. Essentially, reducing cross-subsidization and reducing this margin can increase your profit, your market share, increase your profit margins at the same time, and both these benefits can come through at the cost of your competitors. Moving on to a framework for credibility. Before I can talk about a logical way of thinking about credibility, I need to define these three terms. Some of you will be familiar with two of these terms from your group risk pricing experience. Expected claims cost, underlying claims cost, and actual claims cost. I'm going to go through this by using an example. Here is a snippet of the typical kind of membership data you might get. The first few rows is the membership data you might get for group risk tender. And you've got age, sex, and occupation class, sums insured. To this, we apply our risk rates and our base rates in order to come up with kind of an expected premium or expected claims cost. And these base rates that we apply are based on our experience at the portfolio level, at the market level. Sorry, just for a moment. Essentially, these base rates have been derived using various actuarial techniques, mortality investigations, and that sort of thing. And what these base rates represent is the average. So when you apply these base rates to the membership data and you come up with an expected claims cost, this is the expected claims cost for the average plan with this given mix of characteristics. But the plan we're pricing, Plan XYZ, is not necessarily an average plan. There's lots of things that make this plan different from the average plan in our experience, and this is what credibility is designed for, to work this out and decipher from the information available. To kind of highlight this, I just want to look at one member in the plan, Robert Jones. And when we determine the expected claims cost for Robert Jones, we just say, right, he's a male, 62-year-old, white collar, so rate X is appropriate, so on and so forth. This is Robert Jones. When you put a picture to it, you can see that, you know, he's a real person, he's got a life, he's got a family, he's got a job, and he's got all these features that make him unique, make him a unique risk. Robert Jones belongs to a company, Group XYZ, and these people have something in common other than their blue shirts. They all work for the same employer, work in the same industry, so on and so forth, and they have a bunch of unique characteristics. If we could somehow know everything about these people's, pick each individual from this group and know their behavioural attributes, their attitudes to various things, their genetics, their environmental factors, so on and so forth, and we could also know exactly how each of these attributes translates to a probability of making a claim, and we could actually calculate all of this and know exactly the probability of claim for each person for any given period of time, we applied each of these to their sum insured, we could work out a true claims cost, a true average claims cost for this plan. Obviously, we can't do that in reality, but we're going to define that as the underlying claims cost. So the underlying claims cost is a number that reflects all the intricacies of this plan. It's kind of the golden number we want to get to, but we don't know. The actual claims cost is a number that captures all these intricacies of the plan, but it's got this big lump of noise that's been thrown in with it, which is due to the fact that the actual claims is event-based. So it's a recording of what happened in history. It's a snapshot. And it, rather than being based on the probabilities of events occurring, it's based on whether the event occurred or not. And this, the fact that it's event-based causes this noise to be mixed in with the inherent trend that's embedded in the underlying. So now that we know basic definitions of these three terms, we can talk about what a credibility model is supposed to do. Essentially, we've got two known estimators of the underlying, and we're trying to estimate the underlying as closely as possible in order to minimise this cross-subsidy, minimise this cost that we incur. So we've got the expected and the actual, and we want to determine the underlying. This is the task of the credibility model, to do it as accurately as possible. And before we can figure out how to actually do this, we need to know what is the relationship between the expected and the underlying, what is the relationship between the underlying and the actual. This is a distribution which reflects a lot of things. Don't have too much time to discuss it. But essentially, because the underlying is unknown to the insurer, from the perspective of the insurer, it is a distribution. And our best estimate of this distribution prior to having claims experience is the expected. So from our perspective, this distribution has a mean of the expected and looks however it does. We're not really sure at the moment. But if you think about and ask yourself, what does this distribution actually say? How is this really relevant to credibility, the question of credibility? Well, essentially, to simplify this a little bit, if you think about the variance of this distribution, if this distribution was very narrow and had a very small variance, then essentially the underlying is unlikely to be very far from the expected, which basically means it's a very reliable predictor. So we could kind of put a lot more weight in the expected. Obviously, the opposite is also true. So it's quite a critical part of making the credibility decision, how much weight do you put in the expected. And here it's important to think about what affects the shape of this distribution. Obviously, for each plan, you need the credibility factor that you apply that is appropriate for that plan you're pricing. So here are some of the things that might affect this distribution. Product, for example, if you compare death cover to TPD cover, TPD is affected by a large number of things. You've got age, occupation, and sex, which are rated. So the expected changes along with the underlying. But we've got a large number of factors that are not captured by the expected, which still affect the underlying of TPD. Things like insurance awareness, occupational health and safety, economic conditions, so on and so forth. All these things have an impact on the underlying of TPD, but the expected does not capture them. This basically causes less reliability in the expected when you're trying to predict TPD cover. Death cover is pretty insensitive to all these things. So all else being equal, we could put more reliability or more weight on the expected when we're pricing for death. Similarly, availability of data. Obviously, if you're missing some key pieces of data that you need in order to calculate your expected, it's not going to be as good a predictor of the underlying. So we might want to put more weight into the historical claims experience of the plan. I'm not going to go through all of these. I'll just move on quickly. Similarly, looking at the relationship between the underlying and the actual, there's probably a little bit more to it than this, but essentially it's telling you a similar story. It tells you that how reliable is the actual in predicting the underlying, and you've got to consider these distributions. And you can model these distributions quite well. And I'll go into this a little bit later as well. But the factors that influence these distributions and how reliable the actual is in predicting the underlying come down to members' probabilities of claim, and in particular the average probability of claim across the membership, the members' distributions of sum insured, and also the life years of exposure. So you've got these two critical pieces of information. You've got the distribution of underlying claims and you've got the conditional distributions of actual claims, and both these things tell you what the reliability of each of these important predictors are. Now you need to do the third final component of credibility, which is take these two pieces of information and use them in some sort of logical way to come up with your best estimate of underlying claims. There needs to be kind of a mathematical, logical, reasonable solution which is accurate for this purpose. And so how do you do that? Well, essentially the best way is Bayesian conditional probability. It's accurate, it's theoretically exact, and requires no assumptions. The problem with this approach in the past has been that it's calculation intensive, and it's very hard to come up with the input estimators, the distributions for the inputs. So basically, I just want to reiterate the three things that a credibility model should do in order to achieve accuracy. That is to appropriately consider that impacts, the things that impact on the reliability of the expected, to also appropriately consider all the things that impact on the reliability of the actual, and finally to use an accurate formula in bringing these two figures together in coming up with a final risk premium. I just want to quickly look at existing models. I did a fairly detailed kind of analysis of the existing models in the paper. I just want to... essentially, there's three basic kinds of credibility models: the Bayesian model, the Bolan-Straub model, and the limited fluctuation model. I'm not going to talk much about the Bayesian model because we don't really use it in group risk at the moment. Looking at the Bolan-Straub model and the limited fluctuation model, which are variations of these I used in practice, they both use this formula. So it says premium is a weighted average of the actual and the expected. B is the credibility factor we use. So essentially the difference between these two models is how they determine the credibility factor. The Bolan-Straub model is entirely based on exposure, so the life years of exposure of the plan. So if you've got a plan of roughly 5,000 members and you've got claims history over 3 years, then it's 15,000 life years of exposure, and that determines your level of credibility. In terms of the credibility formula, the Bolan-Straub model uses a linear approximation to the Bayesian, and it's kind of hard to say what degree of inaccuracy comes as a result of this, because the Bayesian does not have to be linear, and I'll show you an example of it later on. But it may be. We don't know at the moment because we don't measure it. The proposed model can measure it, but we're not using the proposed model at the moment. Looking at, in terms of the how much does it expect to tell you about the underlying, because of the linear approximation the Bayesian uses, it only requires the variance of the underlying distribution. But it assumes that it's a constant, so it's not impacted by product, availability of data, and all these things that should matter. So it basically cross-subsidizes between products and between plans that have data and so on and so forth. Looking at the impact of the actual and the reliability of the actual, it again does a similar thing. It takes into account the impact of exposure, which is important. It's a major factor in credibility. But there are other important things, like the probability of claim, that impact the reliability of the actual. And it assumes all these things are a constant aside from exposure. So it only really accounts for exposure. The limited fluctuation model. This is the equation it uses. So it does a number of claims divided by number of claims for full credibility. This model is slightly different in that it ignores the existence of the reliability of the expected as a measure of the predictive power of the expected, which is kind of strange because it does use the expected as one of the weights in determining premium. This causes a couple of inaccuracies. One is that obviously you've got this. It doesn't change, the premium doesn't change as a result of things that impact the distribution of underlying, so product and availability of data. But it also warps the equation for the premium. So it causes the model to allocate too little credibility when the number of claims is low, and the level of credibility increases too quickly as the number of claims increases. And this is easily observable in certain situations. An example is whenever the expected claims is more than three times the actual claims, and we've got a large plan on the tower book that is in this bucket. When this situation occurs, you get a situation where, as the number of claims increase, the credibility-adjusted premium decreases, which is obviously doesn't make too much sense. Moving on to the proposed model, I'm only going to touch this very quickly. I can't actually discuss how it works here. It's covered in the paper in quite a bit of detail. I talk about in the paper the assumptions and the derivations, the how to implement this in practice, and a little bit about the fringe benefits. Originally, this was purely supposed to be a solution to credibility and coming up with a more accurate credibility model. It kind of moved from that. I realised that there's a lot of fringe benefits that come out of this simulation-based Bayesian approach, and I'm very quickly going to touch on these. It's kind of a monitoring system, a pricing monitoring system, because you can measure how accurate your expected is at predicting the underlying, and do this over time. You can spot the need for plan-level rating factors and things like that. It'll also help you price profit share, plan-level allocation of risk-based capital, so you can charge the cost of that capital to the plan in their premium. Some of these things, like rate guarantees, are quite hard to do, and it will take a lot more than a simulation-based method to do this, but some of them, like profit share and allocation of risk-based capital, might be a lot easier. Finally, I just want to talk about a credibility model comparison that I did. Essentially, the first part of the paper was all theoretical arguments talking about the theoretical concepts in credibility, the theoretical advantages of the proposed model, so on and so forth. I wanted to kind of put it into practice and show a more practical way of maybe measuring or showing that this theory really works. So I kind of set up a method for calculating credibility model accuracies. I made up a hypothetical portfolio, or you could think of it as a hypothetical market of plans, consisted of 28,000 plans. For the purpose that I use this method for in the paper, I wanted to make them identical, but obviously in practice, if we use this method, we would make it resemble the portfolio mix of the market. So basically, 28,000 plans, they all looked identical to insurers from the perspective of insurers. They had the same membership data, same exposure data, and so on and so forth. But there was a critical difference that these models had very different underlying plans, underlying claims, and these models got fed through a process which generates claims experience based on the underlying claims of each of these plans. So we had a bunch of 28,000 fake plans, and each of these had an experience which reflected the underlying embedded within these plans. And each of these plans with their fake experience got fed through the proposed model and three existing models. And each of these models priced each of the 28,000 plans. Then, because I knew that true embedded cost of each of these plans, I could measure the accuracy of each of these models in their pricing. So measured the accuracy of their pricing, measured the level of premium differentiation that I got between plans, and measured how they perform in competition, so that I could kind of show this anti-selection effect occurring. Essentially, these are the kind of some of the results that I got, and it's very important to kind of understand you can't get a full understanding of the purpose of this unless you read the paper. Essentially, the black S-shaped line is the true cost, the cost that each of the models should be tracking. The red line is the proposed model, which, as you can see, is tracking it quite closely. And the other three are the existing models, which are not tracking it very closely. It's important to understand that shape does not actually have to be an S shape. It doesn't have to look like that in the real market. That depends on a number of factors, which we can measure using the proposed model. And obviously, it's not going to be as accurate as knowing the real thing, but it's better than not knowing it at all. This shape changes depending on product and so on and so forth. And the existing models will always look the same in that graph, whereas the proposed model will track it and always kind of fit to the shape as accurately as it can. And so it's not a coincidence that the proposed model fits to the black line. Here's some of the results that came out in the comparison on the competition. So before competition, you can look at the upper table. We've got a situation where Each model wins the entire market. And if you look at the third row, that basically compares the premiums won, the total premiums won, to the underlying, and you want it to track at 100%. And so, as you can see, they're all tracking at close to 100% without competition. And you look at the lower table, all of a sudden you've got a situation where the model needs to be cheap in order to win the business, and it only wins the business where it's the cheapest. And hence you get this anti-selection effect occurring. And as you can see, model 1 and 3 are tracking it well below, so they're collecting about half the premiums they should. in this scenario, and again, this is not predicting what's actually going to happen in real life because of the input hypothetical portfolio that was used, but we can use this method in order to try to predict that. More importantly, what this is showing is the fact that this anti-selection, how big this anti-selection may be or could be depending on the inputs that go into it, and it shows the low cross-subsidy effects of the proposed model. As you can see, even in competition, it still sits at close to 100% because of its low cross-subsidy effect, it doesn't really experience this anti-selection. That's pretty much it. So I just want to run through quickly what we discussed. We were talking about pricing accuracy and the benefits that can come from achieving a greater level of pricing accuracy, lower cross-subsidisation between plans. Talked about the credibility framework and the three key things that a credibility model should do, which is to take into account the predictive power of the expected and the actual, and to use an appropriate formula in bringing these two together. We talked about existing models and show that there's some room for improvement in the accuracy on the accuracy side, although obviously they're very simple and they have a lot of benefits on the simplicity and practicality side. Talked a little bit about the proposed model and the benefits that it can bring, and finally talked about the comparison, and it's an interesting method that perhaps we could consider using as in comparing various credibility models or the validity of various parameters. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Hackett. It's now time for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please use the microphone and please state your name before you begin, as this presentation is being recorded. Thank you. Anyone like to ask a question?
I'm Robin Knight. First of all, thank you for your paper. I think you've got a nice balance between some of the practical aspects and actually setting out all the theory behind a lot of the credibility formulas that we use. I guess in practice, a lot of us would use the limited fluctuation model. From my point of view, that's good for small deviations where we can have a measure as to how much we forgive perhaps some of the not so good adverse experience. When you get big deviance, I think you've got to start to put that aside and look through to what's actually happened. I know that a number of companies have started to use full Bayesian methods, and I suspect that that's going to be the way that we go down into the future. So just a few comments. So thank you for your paper.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Thanks, Hackhoff. It's Damien Thornley from MLC. Great paper. Haven't read it through really carefully yet, but I certainly will. Just wanted to make the point on, I feel that your criticism of the limited fluctuation is a little bit unfair when you mentioned that it's biased, because you can use expected number of claims as the numerator so that you don't get any bias, upwards bias for, as you mentioned, schemes with heavy experience, so the credibility goes too high. And I did have a question as well. At the start, when you showed that there's kind of a distribution attached to the underlying claims cost, some unknown distribution that we can't measure it, when you ran that through your model and showed those results at the end, is that an unbiased estimator so that it's the average of that distribution would be equal to 100% of the expected claims cost?
I'm not sure I clearly understand the part about the unbiased estimator.
I guess the point is, when you start talking about there being a distribution in our estimate of QX, then you start saying that there's perhaps more volatility in the expected claims costs than what we would anticipate from just assuming that the QX is fixed.
And assuming the QX is what, sorry?
Is fixed. I guess I was just wondering... In the results table you showed at the end, is your proposed method picking out schemes that say, is it just assigning more credibility and picking out schemes that have the better experience? Or is it picking out schemes on both sides of the, like an upwards or downwards adjustment to the expected?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess in terms of the... essentially, the purpose of the proposed model is to allocate credibility as accurately as possible. When you over-allocate credibility, so you give more credibility to the plan than you should have, what tends to happen is you overprice the plans that had bad claims experience and you underprice the plans that just by luck had good claims experience. And the opposite of happens if you give too little credibility to the plan. So, the point is to kind of centre it and give the right amount of credibility appropriate for that specific plan. In terms of the limit of fluctuation model, I guess kind of from I've analysed the limit of fluctuation model from a theoretical perspective. I haven't gone into too much detail on the various variations of these models that we use in practice. Essentially, what tends to happen from the models that I've seen used in practice, they have lots of different variations of the Bolman-Straub model used in practice, where people have tweaked little things in the model in order to kind of make it do what they want it to do because they think it should be responding in a certain way and it's not, and the same with the limited fluctuation model. But I guess you do have a point there that, you know, I haven't looked at the... having used the expected, and it's interesting how you would calculate the expected number of claims for the numerator.